Legal Management Talks, the official podcast of the Association of Legal Administrators. I'm your host, Valerie Danner. Today you'll be hearing from Bella Sterling, a resident counselor specializing in trauma, relationship issues, and family counseling. She lends her expertise to our latest CE course, Making Mental Health Matter, which is authored by immediate past president James Cornell. Welcome, Bella. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, Valerie. Thank you for having me.
So before we get into our discussion, can you tell our listeners a bit about your background and how you got involved in the CE course?
Yes, I'm a mental health counselor, and I work with couples and individuals in a private practice in Virginia. A few months ago, James contacted me through DC Virginia Counseling Practice, where I'm currently doing my residency. And we had some conversations. James felt very passionately about the importance of mental health awareness, particularly about the state of mental health among law professionals. So we talked a lot about these issues, and I guess then James evolved the idea for this course out of his interest in the topic, and you know, our conversations, I guess, had some influence on him.
In the article, James writes, "Stigma surrounding mental health creates a challenge for those who struggle to find support among colleagues. The facade of perfectionism among peers may lead individuals to believe that they are the only one struggling and therefore should toughen up and keep going." Those words seem to me to be at the core of why so many people don't reach out for help. They feel like they should just be able to suck it up and keep moving on. So how do we combat that perception?
Well, you know, I hear this phrase from clients often. What's wrong with me? Others are doing fine. Or everyone is okay. I should be too. I think this is unhealthy and almost dangerous to us because we need to take our symptoms seriously. And trust that these symptoms are there for a reason. So when we feel sad, when we feel irritable, or if we're aggressive and patient, then we do it to our family, to our pets, to our coworkers, day after day after day, we have to recognize we're not well. And in a way, I'm almost grateful to COVID because even the toughest among us, even the most perfectionist, most resilient people have started noticing that they're also suffering just like everyone else. So it's almost like the sadness and isolation is normalized by the pandemic. But I just want to say there is nothing good that can come from toughening it out, right? So symptoms of fatigue and melancholy and edginess, they don't just go away. They may temporarily disappear, but you know, let's say there is another stressful situation and all of it comes back. So there's no need to suffer in silence. There's plenty of help available out there.
So speaking of the pandemic, it has affected all of us in some way. And long after we get a semblance of normal back and can stop wearing our masks, there will be mental health effects from all that COVID has taken from us. Can you talk a little bit about that and the long-term effects on the workplace?
COVID really has been a mixed bag. It definitely isolated us. We don't see our coworkers. We don't see family. We see friends on Zoom. And our lives became very small. It's grocery store, walk the dog. We mostly stay home and we look for things to do. But on the other hand, many people welcomed working from home and they like not having to deal with traffic or they like spending more time with kids. One of my clients commented that her agency has realized after several months of COVID that there's actually no loss of productivity and everyone is home 100%. Perhaps the pandemic will change our perception that office time is somehow more productive. And I also see that many people have decided to move out of the cities, purchase properties in rural areas. People are interested all of a sudden in being closer to nature. We started gardening. We started growing our own food. So I see this as positive. And among my clients, I see a mix. So people on the extroverted side are definitely missing interactions with colleagues. They, you know, they miss shopping, they miss church, they miss dates with friends. But then the introverts and the more anxious types actually dread going back to the office and commuting. So, you know, I hear many people saying they already requested their managers to create flex time and more work from home options in the future. COVID allowed us to collectively experience a scenario that nobody imagined before. And my sense is that this change will be positive in the long term.
So what are some of the more pervasive myths related to mental health that you'd like to dispel?
Yeah, that's a good one. There's several. I would say that one of the more pervasive ones is that mental distress is somehow a pure result of chemical imbalance. You know, some faulty wiring in our heads. And based on that, many people think that emotional problems can be fixed by a pill. So that's a myth. And most psychiatrists will agree with me. Psychiatric drugs provide symptom relief, maybe, but they will not provide a long-term change. On the other hand, the combination of therapy and medication can do positive results, and therapy does look into the underlying causes of distress. We do attempt to shift behavioral, emotional patterns that are maybe maladaptive and don't serve us well. So basically, you know, we can learn better life skills, and that in turn will shift our brain chemistry. The other myth that I also find very toxic is that somehow seeking mental health help is a sign of character weakness. I have to say, from a standpoint of a therapist, it's just the opposite, because people who suffer on the inside often have to work extra hard to keep it all together. We kind of have to stop blaming ourselves for feeling the way we feel. We have to stop comparing ourselves to that, you know, invisible perfect other, and just honor what the bodies are telling us. Pay attention and listen. One other thing I would like to mention is there's this idea, and I think it's a very American idea in my view, that we're somehow supposed to be happy all the time. And I think the pursuit of a fulfilled life is different than I must be happy. You know, I see that not wanting to be sad, not wanting to deal with complicated emotions, it makes people draw the walls up, right? Isolate, turn away from exploring relationships. And I believe that we're here to learn. And we do learn from adversity, we learn from sadness, we learn from mistakes, we learn from failure. You know, some of us are probably blessed with easier lives, but I think for most of us, it's a, you know, it's a mixed bag, and that's pretty normal, that's universal.
One thing the course touches on is how difficult people suffering from things like depression can find it to ask for help. What are some of the barriers that prevent people from seeking this care?
That is a real concern, and from what I understand from, you know, from reading and from talking to James, it's definitely a concern among the legal profession. And Valerie, you probably know better than I do. The profession requires high performance. It's very competitive. There's often lack of autonomy. There's perfectionism. There's overabundance of type A individuals. And, you know, if you think about it, it creates this condition of relentless psychological pressure. And humans need downtime. We need breaks. We need to shift gears. We need to attend to things that are not work. But unfortunately, the high achievers among us tend to do self-care last or poorly and don't reach out for help. And there is a lot of stigma still, unfortunately, associated with emotional difficulties. So it may feel to some of us like admitting defeat. You know, I think Americans are generally a lot better educated about mental health than in other countries, you know, comparing to friends and family in Europe, but there is still a lot to be done to educate general public about mental health. And there's still a lot of misunderstanding about psychological issues. For example, from very early age, we're taught to think, we're taught to solve problems. We overvalue thinking over feeling. In the long run, unfortunately, if we neglect our feelings, if we don't pay attention to sadness, we don't pay attention to disappointment, we don't notice that we lack joy in our lives, these neglected feelings, they start pushing through and sometimes they come as symptoms. And this can be depression, and sometimes it can be actually somatic symptoms. It can be migraines and skin rashes and sexual issues. You know, I see clients coming in and they have severe symptoms of depression. They're barely capable of getting out of bed. And they're still saying, there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with my life. You know, everything is great. But when you really start exploring, these people put so much pressure on nothing but achievement. And they pay so little attention to enjoyment that, you know, they arrive at 40, 45, 47, and they're all shut off and kind of dried out on the inside.
That segues well into my next question, which is, you know, mental health issues are a human condition, but much of the focus in the legal world zeroes in on helping lawyers. But what can our members do within their legal organizations to make sure they're aware of signs of distress in all employees?
Yes, I completely see this from the literature, and most research about mental health among legal profession, from what I've seen, focuses on lawyers and law students. But there's also legal staff. And they're often under the same pressure and experience the same distress as lawyers, minus perhaps the pay. There are many law professionals who get to witness and hear really traumatic stories and exposed to conflict on a regular basis, to really negative emotions on a regular basis. But unlike therapists, law firm staff are not trained in self-care and not trained to recognize this concept of vicarious trauma, that we can be traumatized through witnessing. So all of this is to say that law profession does not prepare staff to handle psychological distress, in my opinion. And I also believe that managers in general need to learn and pay attention to the warnings of distress among employees. For example, you may notice that a person who's normally on top of things all of a sudden is not responding to emails, misses deadlines, appears withdrawn, maybe irritable. This would be a good time to check in, right? So the check-ins are probably best done in private conversations. And one good skill for managers is to be comfortable with raw emotion, to listen, just to listen, not to jump to things, to fix things, not to offer suggestions, just hear somebody out. And it's okay to suggest to an employee to see a counselor. I keep saying to people, we absolutely should normalize counseling the same way we normalize coaching. It's a positive thing, just a little extra help to navigate life's rough spots.
So this is a tough subject. So I want to thank you for coming on today and having this conversation. I'd also like to leave listeners with a message of hope. What is the one thing you like to say to give them hope to anyone who might be struggling with these issues right now?
Well, I usually urge my clients to embrace the good and the bad and not be so attached to the idea of a perfect life. It doesn't have to be perfect. I do believe, though, it has to be meaningful. And meaning is very individual and something each of us must find for ourselves. But I do believe a good place to start is to take our emotional concerns seriously.
Good words to live by. Bella Sterling, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Valerie.
The next issue of Legal Management, featuring our CE course on mental health, will be published online on March 12th at legalmanagement.org. We'll be sure to add a link to the show notes when it's available. Thanks to our listeners and subscribers for tuning in. As always, you can learn more about ALA at alanet.org. Until next time.